Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to American Warrior Radio. The 1993 movie Dave is one of my favorite political movies of all time. As the movie moves to its climax, the lead character appears before Congress during a somewhat controversial time and says, "Sometimes it's all people want to talk about. So let's talk about it." I struggled with today's show. I had planned on doing a show that had nothing whatsoever to do with the virus that is upending our way of life today. But my scheduled guest was one of those on the front lines of this struggle and had to postpone his appearance here on American Warrior Radio. So what to do? I could replay a past show, but I always hate to do that. Fresh and intriguing content should be our maximum here as much as possible. And frankly, in this time when you're all shuttered in your home, you can find hundreds of stories and interviews of people who inspire in our podcast archives at AmericanWarriorRadio.com. Now might be a good time to take a listen as you stay at home, and I encourage you to do so and share with your friends. Just for screams and giggles, I've taken to calling those CoronaCasts, so feel free to visit the CoronaCasts on American Warrior Radio. It's all people want to talk about, so let's talk about it. And who better to help guide me through today's show than a man who we know is marked safe from the coronavirus because he spends the majority of his time in a secret bunker somewhere. The editor of the Havoc Journal, Mr. Scott Faith. Scott, welcome back to American Warrior Radio.
Ben, thank you so much for having me back on the show, and I promise to do my best to be fresh and intriguing today.
I'll settle for 50%, Scott.
Good enough.
How's that? Now, Scott, just our typical disclaimer, you're currently on active duty, so don't bother Googling him. Scott Faith is not his real name, but he does spend a lot of time in remote parts of the world and brings a special perspective to all things military. You can find lots of great stuff, havocjournal.com, H-A-V-O-K, journal.com. Scott, can you tell us what part of the world you're in now and what are you hearing?
Sure, I'm in the Pacific right now, and of course, all I'm hearing right now, as most of us are, is all about the COVID crisis. And from where I am in the Pacific, people are concerned about this issue, but there's no panic. The only panic I'm seeing is kind of panic buying of toilet paper, which is annoying because my family's going to run out in a couple days, and I've got two girls at home and a wife, so I'm going to have to figure out how I'm going to sort that out. But other than that, I know a lot of people's livelihoods are being affected right now, and some people are actually dying. So I'm very grateful that it hasn't directly affected my family, but I'm very concerned for those families who are affected.
Now, Scott, given that you're in the Pacific somewhere, I'm guessing it's not, here on the mainland, we've got a warehouse somewhere that I think has got toilet paper. It's just a matter of getting it there and getting it stocked, but might be a special challenge for you all out there in the middle of the Pacific somewhere.
Absolutely, and right now people are really worried about if the ships stop coming. Of course, right now there's no danger of that, but I think that's part of what's driving this panic buying. And what's interesting, Ben, is in most cases where there's famine or where there's shortages, it's not a supply issue, it's a distribution issue. And that distribution issue is being exacerbated where I am right now because of the panic buying. So if people just bought normally, there's no drop in supply. If people just bought normally, we'd all have what we needed. But because people are demanding so much more than the market can bear right now, we have shortages, and that's frustrating for a lot of us.
Well, Scott, and that's something I'd like to spend some time talking about today. This is not strictly going to be a military conversation, but in some ways it's going to touch on the what I've called the second order effects of something like this. What your authors, your clan there, your team at the Havoc Journal, what are you hearing from them? Is it everybody still pretty laid back and this too shall pass, or...?
Yeah, so most of our writers, as you know, Ben, are military or ex-military, so most of them have pretty solid jobs that aren't as affected by the coronavirus as some other people. But one of our writers in particular lost his job and is worried about making rent. Fortunately, there's a number of programs out there. I think Pentagon Federal, is one of the programs that's helping vets do things like make rent and try to find other jobs during the crisis. So, yeah, it's affected some of our writers as well.
Well, let's talk a little bit about that, because I know at Havoc Journal there's been a couple of articles, surprisingly to me, but in kind of a relief, Scott, you haven't been inundating your website with COVID articles, but there was a couple in particular that caused me to pause a little bit, and I just want to pull some aspects from that. The first was an article by Matt Trevathan, if I'm pronouncing that correctly. The name of the article is COVID-19, Take It Seriously or We Risk Losing Our Freedom. And that really speaks to a lot of what my concern is. I mean, like you, obviously I'm concerned for people that are ill or at risk, And but it's those second order effects that now I'm thinking about. And one of the quotes from his article was, "The freedom we enjoy in America in part relies upon people being responsible. Right now, the government is asking people to be responsible. If we cannot do this, we will lose some of our freedoms."
He's absolutely right. And just a note about Matt Trevathan, Matt and I go back to our college days. He's actually the first person I ever met that I thought was a legitimate genius. So Matt has no military experience, but comes from a military family and is well-traveled across the world, spends a lot of time in places that are dramatically affected by the coronavirus right now. And what Matt said is dead on. And unfortunately, we're starting to see some of that either as a reaction to people not doing the right thing or kind of what I would consider an overreach in what the government is doing at this time. So, for example, you got a lot of partiers down in spring break who are definitely not maintaining the 6 feet of social distance, who probably believe that they're largely immune to the effects of the coronavirus, which they're not. A lot of young people are being affected by it right now. But what they're doing by this irresponsible behavior is increasing the risk for the rest of the country. So we might see some crackdowns on things like that. We're already seeing in some places the government is restricting the sales of alcohol, firearms, and ammunition. So I think Matt is entirely accurate. I think that the facts have already borne him out. And I think as this continues, we might see more of it going forward.
Scott, that's in your part time. One of the things you are I wouldn't call you a constitutional scholar, but you are intrigued by the Constitution and constitutional issues and politics. And that's one thing that I've been thinking a lot about lately. Is now it's been what I mean, just it, based on my tracking, in 12 days we've gone from canceling events to virtual, I don't want to say a virtual state of martial law, but in California and New York, I mean, people basically ordered not to leave their house. I'm not sure what the ramifications of that are, but it is disconcerting.
It absolutely is, and I think we'll see more of this also. And one of the things that I've asked my military colleagues and anyone who's got an opinion of it to opine about is what they see as the military's role in this crisis. Obviously, I'm not going to get into policy prescriptions. That's not my role as a active duty Army officer, but I'm interested to see what role the military plays. Of course, you got the National Guard, whose primary responsibility is to the state in terms of disaster response. But you also got the active duty forces, who are enormously capable and help out with things like natural disasters. You saw it after Katrina. You see when we have hurricanes here in the Pacific. So I'll be very interested to see what happens as we go forward in terms of what the military does and can do. And, of course, the military is enormously capable force. We can do things like help with ground transportation. We can help with evacuation. We can help with the medical situation. And, of course, especially with the National Guard, they can help provide security in these places where law enforcement might be overwhelmed in cases that they get sick or just there's just too much crime or discontent.
And that, yeah, wow. that's what I'm concerned about, and that's kind of what I'd like to pick your brain about, and we'll share some more articles with our listeners that they can find on the Havoc Journal. Not all the stuff that we're hearing is complete disaster, apocalypse. Scott, when we come back, I want to touch on something. It's another article by one of your regular authors, Kevin Wilson, and it's called COVID-19. The recipe for success includes a dash of prepper. I like it. We'll talk more about that when we come back. This is your host, Ben Buehler Garcia. We're joined by Scott Faith, the editor of the Havoc Journal. Stick around. Trident Grill, Tucson's most military-friendly restaurant, is staying the course. You may not be able to enjoy their great ambiance right now, but you can still enjoy their delicious food. All 5 Trident Grill and Pizza Pub locations are still open from 11 a.m. to 7 p.m. for takeout orders. With locations all over the valley, there's one close to you. The original, near the U of A on Speedway and Campbell. 2 central locations at Craycroft and Broadway and Swan and Fort Lowell. And the new Northwest Side Trident on Ina Road west of Shannon. Don't forget Trident Pizza Pub at Campbell and 6th, right across from campus. Nothing says quarantine in style like some delicious brick oven pizza. Visit tridentgrill.com/locations for the phone numbers to call for your takeout order. That's tridentgrill.com. Welcome back to American Warrior Radio, ladies and gentlemen. This is your host, Ben Buehler Garcia. We're talking with Scott Faith, who is the editor of the Havoc Journal. You can find out more at havocjournal.com, H-A-V-O-K. Journal.com. We're not trying to beat a dead or a sick horse here. We're just sharing some information and some intriguing, maybe sort of a flip side that folks haven't heard that much about right now. Scott, the article by Kevin Wilson, COVID-19, the recipe for success includes a dash of prepper. I really enjoyed that. You know, some of the other hosts in the studio were giving me a hard time about bringing in my own pop screen. And if you don't know what that is, it's just a screen you put over the microphone to mitigate the amount of popping sounds that one makes. But they were teasing me about that a couple weeks ago. I was like, oh, you know, you're paranoid. Well, who's laughing now, fellas? Right?
That's right.
And you did you have to go through SEER training, Scott?
I did.
Okay,
I did.
So both you and I know what, if we have to, you know, we can go out in the woods and pick just the right kind of plant leaves to substitute for toilet paper. But, you know, this prepper thing, and in Kevin's article, he's not talking about, you know, tinfoil hat bunker out in the Pacific like you. Well, careful. You've got your bunker. But it just kind of basic stuff. And I tell you, the thing that really sent a chill up my neck in reading his article was a quote. It says, "And stuff's going to get weird soon. People are out of work, they're bored, and they're scared. And they've got no frame of reference for how this whole thing is going to play out. None of us do, really." Scott, do you think that we're reaching a point where somebody in an official capacity needs to sort of declare? I read an article this morning where they called it a D-Day, where basically they're going to set a date certain at which folks could expect to begin to return to normalcy.
I think that'd be a great thing, a good mark on the wall for people to have something to work forward to. It's always scary when you're in a bad situation and you don't know when it's going to end. When you're making that comment, Ben, I immediately think of when we're on deployment, we all have a DROS, a data estimate return from overseas service, that we have a mark on the wall to work towards. And if we had something like that for COVID, I think that'd be great for the population. The problem, of course, is that we know so little about this disease, and there's a chance of reinfection and things like that. I'm kind of worried what's going to happen if we put a mark on the wall and say, hey, it'll be over on the 15th of May. 15 May gets here, and we actually have more cases. So that's a tricky problem that our political leaders are going to have to sort out.
You know, one of the other things that concerns me, and this is sort of the underpinnings of the next article I'd like to talk about, probably the worst article ever posted on Havoc Journal, but as I'm looking around, one of the challenges I believe we face in this country is the division and the amount of eroded trust in our leaders that has happened over the last several years. And I was talking to my wife, and I'm thinking, you know, name one person in the United States that could stand up and tell us everything was going to be all right and people would listen. I mean, Mr. Rogers is dead,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And when I see or read the governor of Florida or the governor of California saying, look, martial law is not an option, relax, how many people trust them to not change their mind?
I don't think anybody trusts anybody, and that's part of the problem, unfortunately. And you mentioned Kevin's article, and what's interesting about that is it reminds me that many people in the military are kind of used to dealing with uncertainty, used to dealing with shortages, used to dealing with tension and drama, but most of the population isn't. It's not their fault. It's just the way that we've all kind of come up in the system. And I think right now you're seeing a lot of people realizing that this virus is real, that there are a lot of things that they took for granted, from law enforcement to buying toilet paper and rice in the store, are under threat. So they're doing what people do, and they're falling back on what they know. So they don't understand about the coronavirus, but they understand that they have to satisfy their bodily functions, so go out and satisfy that by buying out anything in the store. And what we're also seeing, Ben, that's concerning to me that we haven't mentioned yet, is people are also panic buying guns and ammunition. Mm-hmm. So if you look online, I read one article, a gun store in Georgia said that they're selling five times the normal rate of weapons. So what are people expecting? I think they're expecting a breakdown in the societal order, and that's always bad.
Well, you're a constitutionalist, Scott. I mean, it's Second Amendment, right? You can have as many guns and ammo as you want.
Absolutely, absolutely. I'm certainly not blaming people for that. In fact, I came back to the mainland a couple of weeks ago because I had a TDY in a Middle East country coming up that got canceled while I was in the New York area. So I went back home, back south, and I brought some of my guns back with me that I'd left at my mom and dad's house. So certainly not blaming anybody for that, but that's what we call, you know, an indicator. Indicator people are preparing for something. So now they panic bought all the toilet paper and rice. Now they're panic buying all the arms and ammunition. So that's kind of a volatile situation we're in right now.
You know, I'm trying to keep this light, Scott. I'm okay on guns and ammo when the liquor starts to disappear. And, you know, that's one of the, always trying to look for the silver lining in this. One of the things here in Arizona is the governor has declared it's now okay for a lot of these bars and restaurants that are shut down to folks coming in to dine there. They can actually deliver liquor along with their takeout orders. So maybe that's one of the long-term changes we'll see. Scott, desperate times call for desperate measures. Havoc Journal must have been really desperate to publish the article weaponizing the influencer strategy in a time of COVID.
Actually, I really enjoyed that article, Ben, and I know that you're being self-deprecating because that was your article, and I appreciate you letting us share it. I thought it was great, and not just because you wrote it. I thought it was great because it's a great article, and it goes into depth on how China is kind of at the root of this entire thing without pointing fingers directly at China, who's also trying to recover from this disease.
Well, and this is your chance to interview me then, I guess, Scott.
Yeah, I would love to flip the script here a little bit and talk with you about your article, because I don't think anyone's going to be able to explain it better than you. So if we can, let's start with why. What made you decide to write this article, Ben?
Well, I'm not a military strategist. I'm not a medical professional, but I've had a habit of sort of connecting seemingly unconnectable dots over time. And more often than not, unfortunately, I've been right. You know, when we talk on the micro level, as far as economics and communities, I've never wanted to be more wrong in my life than when I was writing this article, Scott. But it really goes back to a trip that I made over 2 decades ago. It was a high-level trade mission to China. And during the 10 days we were there, we toured a lot of companies and had a lot of meetings. And in most cases, what they called companies, I use the air quotes, were really just party apparatus disguised in capitalist clothing to make us feel better. Anyway, long story short, the last night we were there, we had dinner with a guy that was kind of the equivalent of their Speaker of the House of the party. And you know this, folks who don't deal with the Chinese very much may not know, but they almost always use translators, even if they speak perfect English, because that gives them that extra sort of second of pause to think about what they're going to say. This guy stopped his translator, looked across the table, and spoke to us directly in perfect English and explained how things were going to go. And I remember on the flight back, speaking to my congressman, who happened to be a Vietnam veteran, that, man, if they actually pull off this new model, this new economic model they're trying to put together, we're going to have a real challenge in the U.S. keeping up. They could hamstring us without firing a shot. And as I'm sitting there in this COVID world, those words came back to my mind, and that was really the acorn seed of that article.
I think that's absolutely accurate. And right now, of course, the world's still trying to figure out what happened. The Chinese are trying to blame the U.S. Army for this. But I think most of the world understands that it originated in Wuhan, whether that was at a biological weapons factory there or in the food mart. Nobody knows right now. There's just a lot of speculation on it. But I think everyone knows that it happened there first, and because of the actions of China or their inactions, now it's a lot worse throughout the world. So I think that's probably a very accurate assessment. And I was very interested in your trade delegation. I've never been to China. What was it like when you were there?
You know, it's interestingly enough, we just happened to be there on the first anniversary of the Tiananmen Square massacre. So
oh, wow.
In Beijing proper, things were sedate, I guess, maybe is a word. And we actually were down at the square and not a single person around. And that's you go into the public buildings, and again, that we're talking 20 years ago, Scott, but the armed guards out in front of these buildings, I noticed they had the holster, but they had no weapon in it. And which I found curious. But then we also went out and we're eating food from street vendors and having a good time. And we're talking 1 a.m. in Beijing, and not a concern in the world. And I wouldn't feel that safe in any other major city in the world. But then I thought about, why do I feel so safe? Well, it's because of the way that the government cracks down on criminals there. And it was really chilling at the time. I guess maybe it's a short answer to your question.
That's pretty amazing. And that nests with some things that I saw in my travel. I spent a couple of years in the Republic of Korea, and my wife was in the military at the time, and I remember when we got to Seoul for the first time, we were going in processing station. I looked around and I told my wife, I think we're going to be okay here, because standing on the street corners in their nation's capital, there were cops everywhere, but they were armed with 3-foot-long riot batons. So anything that cop thought he was going to need to handle on his beat, he could handle with a stick, versus the time I spent in Egypt, for example, every cop there's got an AK-47. So that was an interesting wake up for me in the Republic of Korea. And you mentioned the no ammo. So I spent some time in the Philippines recently, and all the guards there have guns. They have pump-action shotguns. But they also wear in holsters, but there's no pistol in the holster, mm-hmm. and the shotguns are empty. So it's a lot of security theater in places like that sometimes, I think.
You know, I want to say something right now, Scott. It was the other thing that kind of made me smile was we were all assigned an escort, and ostensibly they were from the Chamber of Commerce, right? Because we're business people. But really they were, you know, they were there to – I mean, our first briefing at the embassy when we landed was just assume your hotel room is bugged. You know, assume everybody you're spending time with is reporting to a higher authority. So we all had our escorts. Well, I decided I wanted a good Cuban cigar, and I figure, hey, Cubans are communists, Chinese are communists, I should be able to get a good cigar. So this, my escort takes me out of the hotel, and we go exploring for cigars. Well, I learned that, you know, Chinese smoke cigarettes like stovepipes, but we were unsuccessful in finding a cigar. But what was interesting was when they were together in a group, everybody towed the party line. But when I got out by myself on the streets with this guy where nobody was listening, I mean, this guy was an entrepreneur. He was telling me about all the side hustles he had. You know, he had his government-issued apartment, but he had another one over here nobody knew about that he was renting. And really, it warmed my heart because the people there are entrepreneurs like us. And that gave me some hope.
Yeah, at the end of the day, people are people. They want generally the same things. It's just a question of how they go about getting it and what they're allowed to and prohibited from doing in their own countries. So that's very interesting. I'd love to go to China one day. I just don't think it's going to happen anytime soon.
I would recommend against it, frankly, right now. But ladies and gentlemen, this is your host, Ben Buehler-Garcia. We're chatting with Scott Faith, the editor of the Havoc Journal. You can read some of their writings at Havoc Journal, HAVOK journal.com. Scott, when we come back, I'm going to give you a quiz. Stick around. Welcome back to American Warrior Radio, ladies and gentlemen. We're speaking with Scott Faith from a secret bunker somewhere in the Pacific Ocean. He is the editor of the Havoc Journal. A lot of great stuff there. Probably my favorite go-to website for all things military and first responder, HAVOKjournal.com. Scott, I was teasing about that horrible article, but let me give you a quiz that to sort of lay the groundwork here for that. Question number one, what makes us the country nobody wants to mess with more than likely?
I think it's our national power.
Okay.
And it's most likely our military, but also people are scared of us economically and politically also.
Okay, so it's our military might. And whence comes that military might?
Ooh, tough question. So it's our economic engine and our political system that give us the military that we've got.
You're doing good so far, 2 out of 3. Last question, what feeds a powerful capitalist economy?
The free market.
Right, a free-thinking and, most importantly, confident populace, trailblazers.
I like your answer better.
And innovators. Well, I had time to type it up. I was, you know. some parents are homeschooling now. I figure I'd give myself a little homeschool. And really, the core of my article, Scott, had to do with taking the fear I had coming back from that trade mission in Beijing, where they were talking about maintaining the advantages of a centrally controlled economy and adding some pseudo-capitalism into the mix, and boy, that would create something that's hard to compete with it. And if we look around now, I think were successful. The battle space has changed. So my article was sort of a what if. What if I wanted to hamstring the world's greatest superpower without firing a shot? And I really believe that I don't think we're seeing this now. John, a producer, am I wearing tinfoil at all? No? We're good. Okay. So I don't believe this was a planned and planted action. But I do believe, Scott, and you're the military expert, I'm not, but as bad guys around the world are observing how we've reacted to this and how quickly not the biological virus has spread, but how quickly the panic virus has spread, that caused me concern. And that's really the heart of the article.
Yeah, and you're absolutely right. So a scared, armed individual is probably the most dangerous type of person in the world. We've got a lot of fear right now. We've got a lot of people that are armed with weapons and not with facts. So I'm worried about this also. I think it'll be interesting to see how this works out. But also, I welcome China trying to move into the world market and try to build up their economy, because what we're going to see over time, I think, is an emergent Chinese middle class, which is going to demand rights, it's going to demand openness and transparency. We see some of this going on right now. And over time, that I think we'll see China looking more like the United States instead of vice versa. However, it's going to be a rocky road to get there. And, of course, China's very large in modernizing military. It might get a lot worse before it gets any better.
Well, and I want to echo your sentiments. Like I said, my time there, I love spending time with the Chinese people, and they're wonderful, and they really are true entrepreneurs and capitalists at heart. The other thing that I've observed that caused me some really was, weaponizing the influencers. I can't remember the last time our whole nation went to war. I mean, there was September 12th, but really it was, we have to go all the way back to 1945. And, you know, we took care of business there in, 4 or 5 years. We should be able to do that all the time. But the battle space has changed. I don't believe that certain generations of Americans think the same way. And with all of us carrying these computers in our pocket, bad news or wrong news spreads like wildfire. It's the 24-hour news cycle is 24 seconds. And if you could weaponize that, you know, you publish a picture of some knucklehead at Costco with a pallet of toilet paper. 24 seconds later, everybody in town is like, he must know something I don't. I better get down to my grocery store. And hence it begins.
You've made so many good points in the statement you just made in that article. I want to unpack some of them. The one you made that really kind of stands out to me in your article was a baseball reference. And you referenced something like playing hard for 5 innings of a 9-inning game, which I think kind of sums up America's patience level with anything, with warfare, with political stories or anything like that. So we do have a very short attention span and very low patience for things that sometimes take a very long time to sort out. And coronavirus, of course, is one of those things. And we have all this information at our fingertips, but there's no critical thinking to go along with it. And we can see this in all the fake news that goes around and all these things. Like I read an article this morning, Ben, about how people are thinking that the military is about to impose martial law across the United States, which of course is ridiculous. That's not going to happen. And what tipped me off was the photos they were using to support this unsupported rumor were rail-loaded armored personnel carriers from Jade Helm. I don't know if you remember that big dust-up.
We did a show on it. Yeah.
The last time the American Army was going to take over the United States was Jade Helm. These are the same pictures that people are using of vehicles getting moved by rail, which is how we move these vehicles. You don't want them driving on the roads. And people are not any better informed based on the amount of information they got. That's the point I'm trying to make, Ben.
No, and I agree with you wholeheartedly. I guess the what I'm thinking is really, and again, you're the, if you were, I don't know, King Scott Faith, and you wanted to bring down your biggest opponent, would, looking at the phases in this article, does it hold water, or should I go out and buy some tinfoil while other people are buying toilet paper?
No, I think these are very useful exercises to have. And you think about how China is motivated, going back from the time of Sun Tzu, they're not going to fight us on our strengths. It would be foolish and unnecessary for them to do it. So they would look for where we're weak. Right now we're weak internally because, as you noted, we can't get along with each other. People are focused more on the president calling this the China virus than they are on what to do about it, it seems. So I think that this is a worthwhile discussion, and I think these are some very good points, which is, of course, why we published it in the first place.
Do you think, Scott, coming back to the silver lining on this, there's some things I would like to see. One is, one of my clients was a copper mine, and very often the discussion, the people that showed up to protest the mine are driving, Priuses.
Right.
And you want to go out and point at their car and say, what is the disconnect here? What are you not understanding about this? But that's when I first, and we're talking 5-6 years ago, that's when I first started to learn about these rare earth minerals, and I can't pronounce them, but they're used to manufacture all kinds of consumer electronic goods. They're huge in our military communications and weapon system. And guess who was cornering the market on those rare earth metals? It wasn't us. It wasn't someone who's friendly to us. caused me some concern.
It's absolutely China, and we see this in areas all over the world. They're making inroads in Afghanistan, in Africa, all over the place, because they see it. They see the need for this, as do we, but unlike us, they're kind of taking the lead on it, and they're willing to tolerate a lot of things that we're not. So as a country, we're a values-driven organization, so we won't deal with people who produce blood diamonds or conflict minerals and things like that, not on the level that China does, certainly. So when we see this going forward, they're willing to turn a blind eye to things that we're not, human rights violations, et cetera. So when we see them going around with this Belt and Road Initiative, which people need to be paying a whole lot more attention to, we see them making inroads in places like, well, I can get all this money thrown at me with, they think, no strings attached, as a lot of these nations think, and I don't have to worry about these pesky civil rights issues, these human rights violations, because China doesn't care about that. So maybe I do business with China instead of the United States.
Well, I tell you, the other thing that really didn't surprise me, but is a concern to me is, and don't quote me on this data because it came off the social media, so who knows if it was true or not, but, you know, 90 to 97% of the antibiotic medicine that we use here in the United States is manufactured in China. And guess what? What if they decide to just pull the plug on that? And I guess what I'm trying to get at, Scott, you and I are probably in the same vein as far as freedom and liberty and the Constitution. So I'm not big on government stepping in, but I sure would like to see some initiatives that bring certain types of manufacturing back to the United States. I don't know how we do that, but I think it's critical that we do that. Do you agree?
I agree 100%. So we've already seen high-level government officials in open news sources basically saying, hey, that's a nice pharmaceutical industry you got there. Shame if something could happen to it. Especially when it comes to like COVID response and things like that. So I saw an interesting article right before I got on the phone with you, Ben. I didn't have a chance to read it yet, that someone wrote an article about how we should socially distance our economy from China. Now, that's probably requires some nuance. Obviously, we need China in the world economy, and we need to trade with them. But maybe for certain real critical goods like pharmaceuticals, we kind of try to keep that more in-house.
No, I couldn't agree with you more. I tell you, we need to take another break here, Scott. When we come back, I want to talk about the where do we go from here, maybe some of the after effects, because I really, my main concern is I've got plenty of toilet paper, I've got plenty of ammunition, I've got a garden in my backyard. My main concern are the second order effects, and I do believe that they're in a free society like ours, there's only a certain amount of elasticity before people start to do dumb stuff. So when we come back, I want to talk about what happens afterwards. This is your host, Ben Bueller Garcia. We're joined by Scott Faith, the editor of the Havoc Journal. Find out more, havocjournal.com, HAVOK. We'll be right back. Welcome back to American Warrior Radio, ladies and gentlemen. This is your host, Ben Bueller Garcia, and we have on the phone Scott Faith, the editor of the Havoc Journal, who's finding out just what a bad interview I make. We're talking a little bit about an article that Scott and his team were good enough to publish on my behalf at the Havoc Journal, where really the gist of the article was the idea of the concern that the virus that we really need to worry about is not the mean drunk cousin of the flu, but rather the second order effects, the virus that can spread, the panic virus that can spread throughout our population. And Scott, in the article, I joke about the tin hat thing. I didn't really pay that much attention to the beginning of the panic buying until it really hit my pocketbook. And I got an email from an ad agency who represents a local entertainment venue that basically pulled all their advertising because they were concerned that, you know, patrons were going to start to distance themselves and stop buying tickets. Well, next thing you know, all those venues are shut down, forcibly shut down. And then I had a nonprofit client who's got a major trade show that accounts for 20% of their revenue ask me to start tracking things saying, hey, what are we going to do? And that was something else that sort of got me thinking about these second order effects, that if I wanted to really hurt America without firing a shot, this might be something to take advantage of.
Absolutely. And you mentioned we're going to talk about what comes next in this, and we're related directly to something you just said and the point you made in the article when you talked about not giving into the panic and being extra nice with each other. And I think that's one of the things that we're going to have to do going forward is everyone's going to be negatively affected by this. It doesn't matter who it is. Like, I've got a very well-paying government job. My paycheck's not in jeopardy. But everyone I work with and deal with outside of my narrow little window in the military is and will be. And I've got to keep that in mind when I go out. People have lost their jobs. They're not making rent, not able to find what they need in the hospitals, in the stores. And in the hospitals, people are dying and getting really sick. So I think that going forward, above all else, is be patient with each other. Try to love each other a little more, even people you don't know. And don't give in to the panic, because right now we don't need to panic. We need to work together to solve this issue.
And Scott, you touched on something going back to earlier in our conversation about the lack of trust and authority. And let's be very honest. I think there should be, everybody who's an elected office should be required to take a basic economics course. Really interesting article I read this morning. It's called The RX for the Economy, Policies That Keep Business Busy by Richard Porter. And you're just now starting to see those ideas come out that saying, look, you don't understand how wealth works. I mean, this major corporation might be worth a lot of money on paper, but that doesn't mean they've got $50 million sitting in the bank to pay their employees while they're not working.
That's right.
And he put it this way, wealth is a stream, not a lake. And I agree with you. There's people, particularly in the food service industry now, that are left without anything. And how long does that go on? And what kind of policies can we implement that fix that without, frankly, another fascinating article I read this morning said, you know, the cure to this, ironically, may end up being our government pushing us back into models and forms that more accurately reflect the authoritarian power of the Chinese government versus what our founding fathers had in mind.
Sure. I think that's a little extreme. If we do enact any policies like that, I expect it'll be short term, because American people just aren't going to take that in the long term. So I'm not as worried about that, but I am worried about our friends and neighbors, like you said, Ben. So one of the things that I heard is happening or will happen or is in the process of happening is the government is sending citizens stimulus checks, $1,000, $1,200, whatever it ends up going to be. And I already talked with my wife about it, and if that money comes in, we intend to spend all of it on small businesses located where we are to try to help do our small part to help people rebound after this. So I'll take the money. I'm grateful for it. Call it Trump money. Call it whatever you want. I don't care. I'm grateful for that, and we're going to use it to try to help people who are going to be a lot more affected by this disease than we are.
Well, I hope everybody will follow suit, or everybody who's in a position to. You know, some of the local restaurants I know in our markets where people are listening, one of the great ideas I've heard is, hey, buy gift cards online, because you're kind of giving those small businesses an interest-free loan, because that money goes into their account now, and then you can, you know, cash in the gift card down the road when things get better. I guess, Scott, one thing that I'm probably disagree a little bit with you on is things are not the same as they were after 9/11. We still have people groping grandmas at airports. That didn't go away. Yeah. And at that time I thought, well, Americans aren't going to stand for giving that up. So I guess I have a little, once you give something back up, it's kind of hard, really hard to get it back. And that's why folks need to be paying attention.
I think you're absolutely right on that, and that's a great point. I think when it comes to economics, though, people are a lot more sensitive to it. So I think they're willing to give up a lot until it starts affecting their bottom line. So if you had to pay a tax every time you went to get groped up by the TSA, I think we'd see a lot more people. A direct tax, of course, we support it indirectly. Then I think you'd see a lot more resistance to it. So I think if these policies, whatever they might be, end up affecting the bottom line of millions of Americans, I think the patience level will be a lot less for it. But you also bring up a good point about giving up your rights and how hard they are to get back, which is why I hope people are keeping an eye on things like these gun laws and restrictions that are going in place and make sure they don't become permanent after crisis is over.
Yeah, that's very, very frightening to me as well. You know, I guess maybe, again, I'm trying to be the optimist here, Scott. Maybe, you know, if I'm starting to feel a little down, like, you know, maybe my looks have faded over the years, maybe I should buy a plane ticket and get a TSA screener to give me a little extra attention.
Well, if you do that, don't come out to where we are, because we are closed for business. You have to wait until this thing's over.
Scott, I guess the end of my article really touches on what you're saying, is that really the cure to this virus, the panic virus, all of us are already carrying it. We're already vaccinated. We're inoculated. We've got it. And it comes back to what you said is, you know what? It's almost like instead of those stimulus checks you're talking about, I would love the government to send everybody a copy of All I Really Needed to Know I Learned in Kindergarten. Basic stuff. Share everything. Play fair. Wash your darn hands.
And don't touch each other.
And yeah, okay. Don't inappropriately.
Indeed.
Looking for some rays of hope here, Scott. Anything else you can share with us? I mean, it's good for me to hear from a member of our military that, I mean, people spreading this, the panic that the National Guard is going to come out and do something other than drive trucks and stock shelves is a real concern.
So what I like, Ben, is that where I am right now, and it seems like this is much of the country, people are very concerned. And the panic buying, at the end of the day, while annoying, isn't really hurting anybody. It could hurt some people who aren't able to get what they need, especially older people, right away. So what I'm seeing right now is people are handling this more calmly than I would have expected at this point, and that's encouraging to me. Yes, we have panic buying of goods. Yes, we have panic buying of weapons. There's a lot of misinformation out there. But people aren't turning on each other yet, and I hope that as a nation we can come together and make sure we avoid that altogether going forward.
Well, and I hope our leadership recognizes that that is a true concern, and not to mitigate the seriousness of the virus itself, but it's the second order effects that I'm worried about right now. The article you've been talking about on Havoc Journal, what's the name of that inspiring and intriguing and very thought-provoking piece, Scott?
Weaponizing the Influencer's Strategy in a Time of COVID, and it was published yesterday.
And where can folks find that and other interesting stuff?
HavocJournal.com, H-A-V-O-K, journal.com.
And while we're at it, tell us more about some of the stuff. Havoc Journal has diversified a little bit lately, Scott. There's a new nonprofit, and remind our listeners about that.
Absolutely. Thanks for letting us mention that. So that's the Second Mission Foundation, secondmissionfoundation.org. And what we're doing with that is we're looking to help Veterans of America's service community, which we consider to be first responders and government contractors who work for the military, in addition to military veterans, helping them find their second mission after service. And we're looking forward to, now that we're very well endowed, now thanks to some generous donors, really making a difference for veterans of those organizations, those service organizations.
Scott, do you plan on putting up, you mentioned earlier in the interview, the links to some veterans or military members who might find themselves in hardship. Do you plan on posting the links where folks can find help on the website, or have you thought about that?
Absolutely. We're going to write an article about it. We're doing a little bit more research because there's not a lot right now. Like I said, PenFed's the only one I know is doing something, but I know there are others out there. So I'm hoping we can get a list on that, send it out, and get it out to people that need the help.
Well, and when you're done with that, maybe a nice little article about how some of us can stomach MREs if it comes to that.
Wait, maybe we can do an article about the 5 best MREs to eat in a crisis.
There you go. Scott, I really appreciate you spending some time with us here today. I've learned that I am a terrible interview. I think I'll stick to this side of the mic in the future. But I look forward to more great stuff coming out of Havoc Journal. Folks can find out more, HavocJournal.com, H-A-V-O-K, Journal.com. And remember, folks, share everything, play fair, wash your hands. And what was the last one, Scott?
Keep your hands to yourself.
Keep your hands to yourself. Thank you so much, Scott. You and your family stay safe out there.
Thank you, Ben. Thanks for having me on the show.
Well, there you go, folks. This and over 200 other interviews can be found at AmericanWarriorRadio.com. You can CoronaCast while you're sitting at home with nothing to do. Check us out on Facebook. We're also on Instagram and Twitter at Warrior Radio TUC. If you support what we do, maybe in this hard time, consider supporting us at Patreon.com. For less than one cup of coffee, you can help us keep these important messages flowing. Until next time, ladies and gentlemen, all policies and procedures are to remain in place. Take care.